Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have one of the friends of the show coming back to speak with us about our education system. We're going to welcome again Ms. Lynn Taylor, the Common Core Diva. And one of the things that I'm curious about is all the changes in our education system. Do they really mean that we're going to get positive changes, or is it going to be the same old, same old? And I know that Lynn is going to tell us the truth, unvarnished, unsugar-coated. And Lynn, I want to thank you so much for joining me today, because this change, all these changes that we see, it sounds good and it sounds like, you know, it's going to make a difference. But I know that you do deep, deep, deep dives, and you're going to let us know what it means when they say that they're closing the education, Department of Education.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Lennon. That's an excellent question. Yeah, and I can agree more. It sounds wonderful, doesn't it? Because we know it's an unconstitutional agency. But we also know that we have several others that are in D.C. as well, and nothing's being done to close those down. So why are we picking on just one? And, you know, here's the thing. I've said this for years, that I don't agree with having a federal agency that has education, because if you go back and you look in the Constitution, nowhere did it ever say the federal government had any business in dictating what happens in education. But the same was true for healthcare. The same is true for labor and our economy and all the other things that the federal government has expanded through the generations to continue to support. So is it going to mean anything different? Well, yes and no. It will mean that the brick and mortar institution that we know as the Department of Education on whatever street in Washington, D.C., will probably cease to exist. Now, you know, I don't know if they'll go as far as to implode the building or what. But anyway, the point of it is the brick and mortar is supposedly shut down. However, if you look at the fact that we have a Secretary of Education and this department is supposed to be abolished, why did we get one? Why was one appointed if you knew you were going to shut it down? Okay, that's one thing. The second thing is, and I exposed this years ago on my blog, commoncorediva.com, that there was contingency plans for each of the 13 different federal agencies that had that when the Department of Education was shut down, not if, but when, they would get the bits and pieces and the parts that were left over. Now, I can't name all 13 in one go, but again, that information is on my blog. So what is this meaning? It means we're playing a shell game, and you have to kind of guess where it is going, okay? Mm-hmm. Does that mean the federal government is not going to control education anymore? Oh, absolutely not. They're still going to keep their place in education. And the way I know that is if you look at some of the executive orders that Trump 2.0 had put out, there's one in particular where it says it expands opportunities for families and is pumping up school choice. And we've had shows on that before. And school choice is also a farce. But anyway, the point of it is that on the bottom of page 2 of this particular executive order and the top of page 3, it clearly states that the federal government will continue to coach and coerce the states, now not in those words, but that's what it means, that they will continue to show the states this is how you have to use the federal dollars. Does that sound like you're closing down the federal educratic overreaches into the states? Absolutely not, because the federal government is still going to direct how the states use funding that goes for education. They have no business, they have no constitutional right to do so.
Well, is there another avenue, let the states say, I don't want the government money and I'm going to do it myself? Is that a way out from under that?
It could be, but we'd have to go back and look, Dr. Elena, into the fact that the minute all the states decided to forego the sovereignty guaranteed them over education through the 9th and 10th Amendments, the second they got that first federal funding, they sacrificed those two things that did say whatever's not assigned to the federal government goes to the states. So that could be said about healthcare. It could be said about labor. It could be said about a lot of things, but no state is willing to give up the federal funding. They may say they will, but when you go and you look at not just one funding stream, which everyone assumes it's just one, and that would be from Department of Education to whatever state. No, it's not just one funding stream. It's several, because you have grants, you have sub-grants, you have competitive programs that the federal government will offer. And it's, again, not just through the Department of Education. It's anything that touches education. So you think of after-school programs, you think of healthcare, you think of apprenticeships, you think of, you know, taxation, because we're seeing the IRS change tax codes to prop up the fact that businesses can become more and more involved in your child's education. So this is not just one funding stream, but you show me one state that's willing to give up those dollars, and then let's watch what happens, because the citizens will start crying foul because, well, you don't take the federal funds anymore. Well, this program goes. And how are we supposed to live within our means? But if you think about it from a common sense approach, families have to set budgets. Mm-hmm. And if we lived outside of our means as much as our state governments live outside of their means, we'd be under the debtor's prison.
Agreed. So it's, where's the common sense in, you're spending all of this money, you're doling it out to these schools. Uh-huh. If they can't produce a child, on average, that can, uh-huh, read and do math. I mean, people are coming out illiterate. Where's what? The recompense? You know, somebody has to take responsibility for this. Either the government's programs that they're paying money for are no good, uh-huh, or someone's taking that money from the kids and they're not seeing it, and therefore they can't teach them. Which is it?
Right. Well, it's a little of both. It absolutely is, because we have a federal government that wants to say, oh, it's the state's responsibility. And then you have the state going, but I need my federal funding. Well, here's the thing. When the money finally gets to whatever school it gets to, the lion's share goes to administration. And it's increasingly seen that administration is not necessarily the teachers, but the social workers and the behavioral health programs and the over-medication of our children. That's where the lion's share of the money's going. And, you know, the whole goal behind the farce of closing down the Department of Education isn't that academics are going to somehow rise back up to the top. Uh-uh. The lion's share, when every student succeeds, Act was passed back in 2015. The biggest power increase went to the Department of Health and Human Services. Now, this was supposed to be an education bill turned into law. That in itself is unconstitutional, but regardless, the biggest power increase went to the Department of Health and Human Services because they needed those wraparound services that we're seeing a lot of this money go to now. So we're not investing in Johnny and Susie's academic prowess. We're investing in their health care at a school. Why? Because Medicaid can be billed twice, which makes what the government is doing very, very dangerous, and they coach the states on how to do this. But now let's think about it. If we, the people, double dipped into Medicaid, do you know what would happen to us? We would be charged with felonies for doing so, but our government is doing it to us every single day. Now, the second agency that got the biggest power increase under Every Student Succeeds Act was the Department of Labor. And why is that? Because we need to have trained workers graduate our schools instead of well-equipped thinkers graduating our schools. And why is that? Well, look back at Trump 0.10 administration, where the president and the secretary of education went to Argentina. The meeting they attended was all about meeting with the others from all over the globe. I think it was the group of 20 that belonged to the United Nations, and they all supposedly worked together. But the point of it was every other minister of education from all these other countries was coming together to agree to merge education and labor. And guess who signed that agreement? Without we the people's vote, without our even getting to ask what we thought about it. And they did this on the taxpayer dime. So, you know, you've seen this continual uptick in, oh, well, we need to have skill-based people. We need to have skill-based students. We need to teach them this skill, that skill. And it's going into what's known as the hard skills, or in other words, what you do with your hands, into the skills, which is what you do with your brain. And both of these are getting it so that with the supposed closing of ED, all those programs that are steeped in career tech education or STEM, the science, technology, engineering, and math, or all those apprenticeships and all those kind of programs, those are going to labor. All the special needs, all the behavioral programs, the mental health programs, all the Title I children, they're going to Health and Human Services. And let's see here, that also with the labor and all those kind of programs, it's going to morph over into Department of Transportation, Department of Energy, Department of Agriculture, Department of, let's see, the Treasury. It's going to go into the Department of the Interior to go towards the Indian schools as far as those on the reservation. So we're seeing this play out like it's a really good thing. But when you start scattering it like this, you can't really effectively shut anything down. You're just going to see it continue to grind our children down. You know, I've described it on your show and other shows as well. It's kind of like, as bad as the Department of Education is, at least it's all in one location and you know what to do with it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start to scatter it, it's kind of like when you walk into a dark room, you turn on the light, and you see the cockroaches scatter. You cannot, it's impossible to get all of them at one swat. You can't do it. They run too fast. And this was the plan all along, to merge education and labor, not because we wanted children who grew up to be citizens who earned a living to support their family. No, this is all about pumping up the national economy so it can be a good member state of the United Nations.
So it seems to me also that it's more opaque. You can follow something, but you can have all these special interests, public-private partnerships, direct training into the corporation that's sponsoring, you name it. And it's really hard, you're right, to see every nook and cranny of what's going on.
Right.
But one thing that you just described is that that you said in the show before, children are being siloed. So they're going to be they're going to be part of the tech, or they're deciding what your child's going to be, not your child. And what could go wrong with that? A lot.
Oh, everything can go wrong with it. And, you know, here's the thing, Dr. Elena, I'm not seeing just one side of the aisle go, yeah, let's do this. No, this is what we call the unibrow politics or the polarized party. Notice I didn't say parties plural, I said party. Mm-hmm. And why is that? Because when it comes to education, neither the Republicans nor the Democrats nor your independents or whatever political party that you happen to belong to have any business in, because it was not assigned to the federal government in the Constitution.
How did it's a law, right, that created the Department of Education, correct?
Yes, it absolutely was.
So technically that law itself was messed up because it didn't meet constitutional requirements, right?
Right, and every law since then that has to do with some sort of federal interaction with education has been just as unconstitutional. It absolutely has. It doesn't matter if it was the education, the Elementary and Secondary Education Act of 1965. It doesn't matter if it was the Every Student Succeeds Act, which was supposed to supersede the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. But here's the thing, if you go in and you read that law, which we're still under its jurisdiction, even though it's unconstitutional, it's because we have a body of citizens who they don't know what their constitution says, so they're not holding unconstitutional activity accountable. They're not charging it with criminality, which it absolutely, because you think about if we did this kind of stuff, would we be encouraged to go on? Would we be rubber stamped to go on? Or would we be told, I'm sorry, you can't do that, that's a crime, and here's your punishment? I know exactly what would happen to us, but, you know, it just absolutely stymies me that we somehow, some way, have trusted those who supposedly represent us when they're too busy selling out to the lobbyists and the corporations and the philanthropists who are overreaching into education. And what I'm seeing out of the current Congress and the current administration is we're going to continue to encourage this kind of public-private partnership, which is fascism, to happen, because after all, teachers just can't do it all.
Wow. On that note, let's take our first break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living a Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor, and you can go to her website, commoncorediva.com, to read what she's written and hear other interviews that put together the bigger picture of what's going on. I have a question that's a little bit of a segue.
Okay.
When this executive order was signed, the biggest voice that I heard crying about it was the teachers union.
Right.
Why are they pissed? I mean, are they going to lose power?
You know, that's a very good question, and I am going to speculate here. I have not done research, so I cannot speak factually on this.
Mm-hmm.
I can speak factually based on my research, but as far as them being so ticked off about closing down education, I'm going to speculate on that one, just to clarify. I think the reason that they are just absolutely beside themselves is because they know that people are going to start looking. And when they start looking, they're going to see the involvement of both the teachers' unions, where they have absolutely gone places that they should never go, that they are supporting agendas that are not American-based but globally based. And the reason why is because both of the main teacher organizations in the United States belong to an international teachers' union, which is a buddy, a partner to the United Nations. So I think that's why they're up in arms, because they fear they're going to lose control, and they can't lose control, because if they lose control, then they can't call the shots. And here's the thing, if you really want a quality education at a state level, you're going to need teachers who can think for themselves and act for themselves and plan their own curriculum. And you can't do it when it's a system that is run by people who are hooked into un-American entities.
That's a really excellent point. And I had no idea there was an international teachers union that they belong to. So they serve a source outside of the United States,
right?
Uh-huh. So if everything's, and you've mentioned on the show before, the things that they're teaching children, the sex education modules that are going on in younger and younger ages, that's based on what the UN has pronounced that they want to teach children, right? This is not just coming, it sounds like, from a vacuum. It is being driven by a bigger agenda.
Right, absolutely, because in, I believe it was 2019, UNESCO, which is supposedly the education, scientific, and cultural arm of the United Nations, published a report where it basically said that all homeschooling was bad and that some porn in school was good. And you really have to stop and go, what? What did she say? What is in that report? It absolutely was. And I was absolutely shocked. But, you know, not only are we seeing the sex thing pushed for younger and younger grades, I just did some research today about artificial intelligence, and they're starting children off in either pre-K or kindergarten and expecting them to master and get to know AI. And if you'll refer back to the show that we did about the beta babies, where this was going to be the first generation of babies who had AI in their lives. This is really scary stuff. And why are we propping up artificial intelligence, which is set to replace humans, and we're going to teach it to our children as, oh, this is a good thing?
You know, it'll change the whole dynamic of being self-sufficient, mm-hmm. you know, a thinker, a critical thinker for that matter. And uh-huh. you'll just be subservient to this. You can't do anything. You can't cross the street unless AI tells you to cross the street. Or
right.
like people can't even write at this point. And I have a feeling the stuff I read online, some of these articles are written by AI because they're so poorly constructed in terms of
right.
sentence structure. So, and that's now going to be, from if they have their way, it'll be so good. Now, this is rudimentary, so it's bad. So it'll be so good you won't know whether it's a human or not.
Yeah, and I, well, you know, the goal is to reduce the human beings. And, you know, Musk is one of the ones who supports that, but yet he's supposedly slashing all kinds of government waste. He's not the first one to do counting the books, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the first one, but for some reason he's being touted as the first one. It's like, you know, if you look at the tariffs, the president who's sitting there now is going, well, I'm going to exempt iPhones and smartphones and laptops and this and that and the other. Well, okay, here's a conflict of interest because he's starting up a tech service that would benefit from smartphones and laptops. So we can't have conflicts of interest in good faith and serve the people. So why is our president, why is anyone working for the president in the cabinet or wherever or in these government offices, why are they allowed to do it, but we can't? We've got to get to a point, Dr. Elena, where we say, okay, corruption is not just reserved for the Republicans. It's not reserved just for the Democrats or the Independents or whoever else is up there in D.C. It is something we can no longer ignore. And, you know, I think people are getting to that point. I really hope they are, because we've been saying it for years that we cannot allow our nation to exist under this type of corruption, or we're going to lose it.
I think you're right. And if your pronouncements about this division of the education system to HHS or Department of Labor or wherever it's going, they're literally parsing the society just to have manpower enough to uh-huh. support AI. But at some point, they're not going to have enough jobs for what people need, right? It's going to, what do people do when they've maxed out how many people they can educate to go into the Department of HHS or wherever? What's the rest of the folks supposed to do?
Live off the government, because the government has been shifting this for years, where you become more and more dependent on what the government says. So it's kind of like a really twisted version of Mother May I, you know. May I live here? May I go work here? May I go get this food? It sounds, I'm not trying to oversimplify, but I'm trying to get it so people understand this is not a good thing to have a government become your nanny, because government is a system. Systems don't give a fig about people. Now, those who represent us should give a fig, but they're too busy listening to the corporations and the lobbyists of those corporations to bow to their agenda than to listen to their constituents, and the constituents feeling like, okay, my representative or my senator has got my back. No, what they do is they have a big knife and they're sticking it in your back, and they're sticking it in your children's back. That's what's so awful.
Well, you can't serve two masters, right? So if you're supposed to
right.
be there supporting and advocating for your constituents, but you're taking money from agencies and, you know, money from private sources that work against your constituents, and you only come around when it's the next election cycle. And I don't know, that system is not going to be supported. It's not going to work. I think you're right. People are done with, I think they're tired of being afraid. They see the things are not what they said they were. And the whole system, the underpinning is rotten. It's like having termites or something.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the foundation, it's totally moth-eaten, you know, eaten away, and is barely standing all up. And do you think, I don't want the system to fail wholesale, because that's going to hurt a lot of people. But is there, I mean, we talked about the states being more independent, but I mean, you've said on the show many times that even if you go to homeschooling and do it yourself, you're still going to be somehow put on this indoctrination wheel. But there has to be something that parents can do to stop this process.
Well, you know, it's really bold, but, you know, you could stop paying taxes. And yeah, that might mean that you lose your house. It might mean that you lose your car. But you've got your family, and which is going to be more important, your family or these other things that don't live and breathe? I mean, yeah, we need housing. Please don't think I'm being trite when I say that. I know it would be a huge sacrifice, but if enough people said, okay, you're using my property tax to do things that harm my children or my grandchildren or my, you know, those in my family, and I'm not going to stand for it. And if this is the way that they're going to feel the pinch, then let them feel the pinch, because we've been pinched so much that we are finding that there are ways in which our government is increasing our taxes, not only on our property, but in other areas, so that it can tax us out of those homes. And it would tax, who knows when that happens, not if, but when. That's going to line right up with the, oh, you'll own nothing and be happy. Well, do you still have your family? Then if you have your family, you can be happy and you can do something. But when they're so busy trying to take it away from you and you allow it, you're just continuing to open the door. You're continuing to forget you've got a Fourth Amendment that can be your buddy. You also have a Civil Rights Act that can be your buddy, so that some of this tyranny can finally be stopped. But not enough people know their documents or know their laws well enough to stand on these. They think, oh, no, we'll just let Dr. Elena, we'll let Lynn, we'll let somebody who else is in charge. I'm too busy doing this. I can't do that. I don't like to speak in public. Oh, no. Well, we need to start saying yes. And even if your voice shakes, you better start speaking up.
I think that's a great call to action. So let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. I'm speaking with Miss Lynn Taylor. And I think you're right, Lynn. It's, if you do nothing, you're on a path where they're going to take it from you no matter what.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And I think this
even
is
your children.
Exactly. And uh-huh. that there's a article I read that from Massachusetts, a family was being investigated by department, you know, DFACS, and they ended up leaving the state before any kind of investigation happened, right? It was a talk uh-huh. about, and they're going to Texas to retrieve them. This is the level of power that the education system at this point has. If you
right.
continue down the path, then you'll have absolutely no say in what happens to your child. And, you know, I just don't understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, most parents would see this as an assault on their child and on them, and they would speak up. How do you think we've come to this level? I mean, is it just the society that we live in? It's just things and not really thinking and just gather as much as you can and not think about the consequences?
Exactly. That's exactly it, because we have to be gratified right away. We don't stop and think in terms of the long term, you know, like, okay, let's say that the Department of Education, whether it closes or it scatters, they still keep a program that's called a family ambassadorship. And what happens, and we've talked about this before, is that they get someone from the government to come to your home to rate you as a parent, how well you're doing. Are Johnny and Susie doing okay in school? Blah, 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 blah. What this is doing is it's telling the parents they don't have the authority to run their family as they see fit. They have to run their family as the government defines. Now that, my dear, is absolutely horrid. And most people are so busy getting all this stuff so that they can, you know, all sit around the dinner table stuck to their phone, that they're not thinking about, okay, when that official from the government, I don't care if it's local, state, or federal, knocks on my door, and I'm here to rate you as a parent and you know, make sure that Johnny and Susie are a school success. And again, that's letting the government define what your children are as a success. You don't remember, oh, wait a minute, the Fourth Amendment, it, you can use that, and I don't care who they are, they cannot come in unless you allow them. Unless it's a search and seizure warrant, mm-hmm. they have no business in your home for any reason. But they wait until someone is banging on the door, and you know what? If that person was from government, but think about this as from a criminal aspect. I'm standing at your door and I'm beating it down and I've got a big darn weapon and I'm pointing it straight at your kids. What do you think you'd do? Do you think you'd get off your butt and do something? Of course you would. But think about it from the government viewpoint. They see they're doing nothing wrong. They see they're doing everything to help Johnny and Susie succeed, but they don't understand that they might as well be there at the door with a gun to your face going, let me in. No, because we're too polite. Oh, yes, come on in. And then the parents get roped into being better parent classes. Under whose definition?
That's a great question.
I mean, again, it's the government running it. It's not mom and dad being respected enough by our government to say, yes, they are people who can run a family. They are people who nurture their children. And you know what? Even if they aren't the best parents in the world, they still love their children. And you know, we were told in scripture, it doesn't matter if you believe in Christ. It doesn't matter if you don't. We all have our children in common. And we would do anything, or we were supposed to do anything, to protect them. But somehow it's become okay to say, you know what? You have them 8 hours a day, and I'll take what's left over in weekends. And we might as well be talking about joint custody here. And you cannot joint custody with a government over your children.
Well, we see how that works. That's actually the scenario that happened. And don't forget the healthcare system is interwoven in it, right? So apparently the parents got flagged by the pediatrician for quote unquote, you know, child neglect. And it turned out it was, they didn't want to give a particular vaccine. That was the reason.
Right.
But it was someone's saying that you're a bad parent. It wasn't any proof in it. There was no adjudication. Like, you know, you didn't even get to present your side of the case. You were guilty until proven innocent. So this system's not even the typical legal structure where you can have some support, present your case. You don't get that in some of these instances. You're just, that's it. You know, you're just on the outside looking in. And I can't imagine, I mean, I think California has a law now that passes that says that if your child can be seized just by you not doing what the government feels is the right thing.
And this, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. You said something really interesting. What constitutes the right thing? What constitutes health? If the whole point of education, usually it was, and I guess at the beginning, was to educate your child, they're failing at it. If the kids can't read and write, how are they supposed to, I mean, if school is supposed to be about that, which you're saying now, it kind of isn't, and it sounds like it's not, how do we get back to that point?
We have to have people who are willing to step up in their local areas and tell the school board, you know, based on the Civil Rights Act of 1981, Section 1983, you have somehow harmed or impeded my child's right, and I'm coming after you. We need to have people show up at the school board meetings who are like, not let me, but I demand to see the curriculum. I demand to see how my taxpayer dollars are being used. And you don't do this by yourself. You need to have a group of like-minded parents who are just as ticked off as you are. Because the one thing that local, state, and federal government officials use over us is a fear factor.
Mm-hmm.
We're more afraid of them than they are of us, and that's our fault. Because if you look at the foundations of our country, it was our job, it was our duty, it was our privilege as American citizens to, when we found people who were in leadership and staring us the wrong way, that we showed them we were the boss and they should be afraid of us. So we need to make these people quake in their boots over what they're doing. And, you know, this is one of the things you're talking about, the family that fled to Texas. Well, we're seeing more and more states, and this has been going on for years, where, you know, they're coming after the homeschoolers. Well, we don't know what you're teaching. And, you know, you think about some of the news stories you heard about the really out there fringe cases of, you know, hey, this family said they homeschool, but yet they locked Johnny and Susie in a closet. Well, that's an extreme example. Not every homeschool family does that.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the majority of homeschool families would never do that. But those are the cases that states are using as justification to come in and, well, the government needs to find out what you're teaching and who you're teaching and how you're teaching and this, that, and the other. And if that's not bad enough, then they're saying in some states that, well, okay, to prove that you've got some sort of education, you need to go take this nationally normed assessment. And what do you think the assessments are aligned to? A corrupt system.
Exactly.
So this is why I say, even if you homeschool, you are not going to be as safe as you think you are. You have to be diligent. You're diligent with your car payment. You need to be even more so, 1,000 times more, when it comes to your children.
I couldn't have said it better. And it's, you know, our last show is about the beta babies. They won't. We know, because we live both sides of this, what it's supposed to be like. But these children coming up now will never know what it's supposed to be and how they're supposed to have their freedom, intellectual freedom,
right,
to do and to pursue their best life. The whole society potentially can be changed in less than a generation from what you're describing.
Oh, yeah. But if you look back to, you'll think back to Nazi Germany, that was the whole thing. What did Hitler say? Give me one generation and I'll ruin them forever.
Are there any not the teachers union, not the big umbrella, but are there any other organizations of teachers, again, like yourself, who did it for the love of teaching children to learn, to be advocates for their ability to have that skill and expand it throughout their life? Where are the teachers who believe that?
If there are organized groups of teachers who are doing that, I'd love to meet them, because I don't know where they exist.
Wow.
I know of individual teachers who are just holding their breath that they get to hang on to their job so that they can, you know, teach children what should be taught. But then you have a system that wants to do away with them. And why do you think when Common Core became the landscape of education, they got rid of a lot of really good old school type of teachers? It's because they would not conform to this system. So what did they replace who did they replace those teachers with? But those who had been through the system, Teach for America, KIPP schools, you know, all this other kind of stuff, they came into the classroom indoctrinated with this system and started teaching whacked math, like, you know, 1 and 1 is 3 or whatever you want it to
yeah.
be. Well, your old school teacher would have said, no, that's not correct. And it would have been okay, because you would learn 1 and 1 is 2. It's not whatever you want. But that was part of the agenda, to continue dumbing our children down. It absolutely stymies me that people think that our administration can shut down something as big as Department of Education. And let's stop and think about it. It, besides the military, it gets one of the most taxpayer dollars of all the agencies. But yet, if you look from the stats, if you're a stat person, you'll see at one time we were number one in the world. We're now down like almost 40 in the world. It's really embarrassing. But to think that our administration claims that they can do this without Congress is, I am so horrified, because you cannot abuse the executive office like that. Now, supposedly, he signed an executive order ordering Congress. The president cannot order Congress.
No.
That is a tyrannical, dictatorial move. And if anyone listening supports that, then I am sorry for you, because that is not how our government of checks and balances is supposed to work. Congress makes the laws. The president signs the laws. The president is supposed to take care of the nation as far as making sure the executive branch runs smoothly. Okay, people will argue, well, Department of Education is in the executive branch. Well, yeah, well, so is Department of Health and Human Services. So is the Veterans Affairs. So is the Department of Transportation, Energy, Homeland Security. Oh, there's another one that's really unconstitutional. The Department of Justice, the Department of State. But every one of those, Dr. Elena, will pick up parts of education as well. So tell me they're shutting it down, and I'll tell you BS and horse hockey. They are not.
Wow. I mean, you're absolutely right. If you know your civics, I don't know if they teach that anymore either, right? It's they're separate divisions of the government, and one doesn't supersede the other. Everybody's got their lane, correct?
Right. So that's how it's supposed to be taught. But modern day civics is more about being a collective globalist than it is, okay, here's how American government is really supposed to work. And I know that there are going to be people who will comment, oh, well, my school does. And if your school does, more power to them. But not enough schools do that. And it's absolutely egregious to me that anyone would think, well, my president shut down the Department of Education. No, he didn't, because he cannot do that. Congress is the one that can do that, but not the president. The president needs Congress. Congress can order this to happen, and the president signs it. We've got things backwards. And this is not the only agency that we've got backwards. We cannot have any president, I don't care if they're Republican, Democrat, or pink, purple with blue polka dots. They cannot abuse, they should not abuse the office to which they were voted in.
And you realize that from an emotional standpoint, the things, the hot button issues that are always put out there in front to, I guess, have people look at the shiny thing and not really pay attention to the bottom line. Because, you know, I understand if as a parent, your child in kindergarten is getting sex ed, nobody wants that. The books in the library, things like that. Those are things that get people really emotionally riled up. And I think they open that pathway for them for moving in a way that's not appropriate, because you just want it to end. But, you know, we have to be more thoughtful and stop letting emotion drive this. And I think they're really good at driving emotion and anger and fear. And it's just one big jumble now that you just want something to happen, change it no matter what, but not thinking about what the outcome is going to be.
And think about this. If your president is going to say that I can do this without Congress, what else is he going to do without Congress? Again, that's not how our government's supposed to work. We are a constitutional republic. We are not a democracy. We're certainly not a dictatorship. But, you know, and I would say this about any of the past presidents, because we've seen them increasingly overstep what they can do as president, because someone's going to listen to this. Oh, well, she just hates Trump. No, it's, I don't know him. I can't like him or hate him. Do I like what he's doing in the office he's doing? No, but I didn't like what Biden did either. I didn't necessarily agree with what Clinton or Bush said or any of the others. It's because as the years have gone by, people have become less active in how their government works and more dependent on the decisions that our government makes. And that's a dangerous mix.
Well, it'll always want to perpetuate itself and get bigger and more powerful. Mm-hmm. That's what governments do. On that note, let's take our last break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in Solution. And Lynn, how can people read your blogs and see other interviews that you've given?
Okay, you can go to commoncorediva.com. If you wish to schedule me to speak to your group, either in person or online, you can email me at info@commoncorediva.com. I'm on Twitter, X, whatever they call it now, @commoncorediva. You can find me on Facebook. It's Common Core Diva 2023, because for whatever reason, my original Common Core Diva page somehow offended the Facebook gods, so they shut it down. So I've reopened a new one.
You gotta do what you have to do. Just keep your voice out there.
Absolutely, we do.
So my question, if you could run this, if you had the ability to right this ship, what would be the first thing that you would do to pull this back from the brink?
Well, excellent question. What I would do is the same thing I have said for years. And first of all, you have to repeal all those unconstitutional but yet federally recognized acts that were called law. Okay, they're quasi-law. They're de facto rule. We don't have de facto rule in America. We're supposed to have, you know, constitutional law. So you would have to repeal every one of those federal education laws. You'd have to repeal the laws that are attached to education, either through labor, health care, or any of the other agencies that we've mentioned, because the reason ag will be involved is because of the free lunch program. The reason the State Department is going to be involved because they're, you know, working with other nations. The reason the Justice Department is involved is because, well, they're worried about school discipline and people becoming criminals and that sort of thing. So you see, you have to get rid of all the laws that would somehow connect to education. And believe me, there are hundreds. That would be your first step. You could start to close the department down by doing all that first. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a long time to do that. But that's a good thing, because while all that repealing is going on, the states can start to think, oh, okay, well, we're no longer under this thumb. We're no longer under that thumb. Ooh, here's what we could do with education. And the states would be encouraged and enthused to think that they had a chance of being able to truly run how education's supposed to be according to what the citizens of that state want. That's the first step, and it's a long one. And this is why no one wants to do it. They just think, okay, well, you know, media said, president said, it's dead, it's dead. No, it's not the same thing as when, you know, Secretary DeVos was in office and she goes, oh, Common Core is dead because every student's disease act killed it. No, it didn't. It extended it. Anyway, that would be the first thing you would do. Second thing that you would do, you would have to start defunding all the programs tied to all those laws that took you 40 forevers to repeal. Because you kill the law, you reduce the funding, you give the government no leg to stand on, which is how it should be. And then, after all that, then you start getting rid of the employees. Then you start getting rid of the federal footprint. Then you start seeing federal laws like U.S. Code 20, Section 1232A, that said that the federal government can have no jurisdiction or interjection into what happens into education. And that law has been violated for I don't know how long. And under the Civil Rights Act of 1981, Section 1983, any of us in the nation could go after every single politician and their staff using that particular law to enforce that our rights were violated, that our rights were taken away, because they've been doing unconstitutional activities for decades. Now, when you find a person or a state that's willing to do all those things, we need to have a serious talk so that they can say, okay, here's how we did it, and here's how your state can do it.
Well, every state would be kind of a, I wouldn't say a petri dish, but an experiment to see, get the best out of everybody, and then pull that. I'm sure others, you're right, they talk to each other. If you're a student's academic performance has risen, I'm sure people are going to rush to that state to see how they did it. So you just described the absolute opposite of what just happened, right? People got fired. The departments got close, our money just left. So basically people are caught out. And I think it ferments a lot of bad will and anxiety, and a society that's anxious is a society that's controllable.
Well, it absolutely is. But the thing about it is, and I've been saying this ever since everybody started rejoicing, oh, it's dead, it's dead, it's dead. I'm like, where's the law? The law's still in place. Until you kill that law, it's going to keep going. You've done nothing other than fall under the premise that your government cares about you. Remember, it's a system. It can't care. But I tell you, if you go through the proper way to do this, don't think there's going to be someone somewhere in that government. Because remember, this is not just top down from America. This is top down from somewhere, wherever the UN is founded. That someone's going to be looking for you to trip up, because the second you trip up, you're stuck. We told you you couldn't do it. We don't need that. That's an insult.
Good point. It's an octopus, literally.
Yeah.
And more money gets poured in. You just described, I've done a few shows now, how the healthcare side of it is just entangled itself into the school. They get money to run clinics. They get money to diagnose and treat. I mean, they're not even doctors. It's like practicing medicine without a license.
In no other instance would we ever allow someone who's unlicensed as a doctor to treat our children, but put school on it and then go, oh, it's okay. No, it's not. The reason why the Medicare funding under Title I was expanded in Every Student Succeeds Act wasn't to do anything other than to give the opportunity to take the money away from those who truly needed it to, we're going to universally assess every child for some sort of mental health problem or behavior health problem or some malady, and we're going to stick a label on it, and we're going to do so because the schools can double dip and they'll receive more funding. So those who needed the money, like your special needs kids and all that, well, they get some, but now they have to share it with somebody who really was just having a bad day, but because the day the test was given, it proved that they had some sort of mental health crisis. Well, here we go with the social worker. Here we go with the school-assigned nurse. Here we go with and the nurse may be a contract from a private institution or another doctor's office. So who okayed that? Well, under the funding, and you know better than I do how all that stuff works, you know, it's just a sick and twisted system, because not every child has a health issue. Not every child needs overreaches into their family. It's absolutely insane. And, you know, we've talked about it on all of their shows. You go in, you're 5 years old. And you're somehow now your attention deficit disorder. You're five. You're going to jiggle. You're going to wiggle. You're going to want to jump up and down. You're going to want to do those things because you're five. You're not 55. Oh, it just infuriates me.
I get it. And it's, you're creating the environment where you get to decide that the diagnosis exists, and magically you have money and the ability to control the situation. And it's not based on reality most of the time, but my mantra has always been follow the money, and there's a lot of money to be doled out. Uh-huh. And you add in public-private partnership, and you've got a whole nother soup, because the contractors or the people giving the money always have stipulations. Why wouldn't they? Right? And inherently it's going to be unequal because you want this child to be the next step into your corporation, but someone else is not going to get that job. They may be better. Who knows? It's just not based on merit. It's not based on individual pursuit. And that's a society that's not going to go very far because you have people who shouldn't be doing some of the things they're doing, pushed into parts of society that they don't mean jobs, et cetera, they don't want. But what it does, it crushes the human spirit. And to me, that's the most devastating part.
But absolutely. It's kind of like, you know, someone's more willing to say, no, I'm going to pay my property tax. I'm going to let them keep running my children in the ground. I'm not going to protect my children to the point of, no, I'm not going to let them do that to my child. And, you know, I don't understand the groupthink that's going on in this nation. I really don't, because the whole premise of, well, I'm a Republican and you're a Democrat, therefore we can't agree. Well, yes, you can. You can work to agree. I mean, you know, whether you approved of the recent protests or you didn't, lots of different groups organized those protests as a way for citizens to say, I'm seeing corruption, I don't like it. And, you know, that's okay. We don't have to always agree, but we do have to understand that the government especially wants us to be divided. It wants to divide us over political affiliation. It wants to divide us over skin color. You know, here's the bare bone basic fact. It doesn't matter what color your skin is. There is one race, and it's called the human race. And that was God invented. Now, the different skin colors, also his jurisdiction. So for the government to tell you, oh, well, there's a problem with this race and that race and the other race, and people are buying into it. Mm-hmm. No, we all have the same blood. That makes us human. That's what we're supposed to be. But, yeah, the government wants to divide you over any possible thing it can, because if it drives that wedge in deep enough, and this is the harm to the family because it's driving a wedge between the parents and the students, you're going to win. You don't want the government to win when it comes to your family.
I think that's just a beautiful way to end the show, because you've just put this is what the unvarnished truth is. We need to stop falling into this gap of, I'm a victim, but I'm also special, and you did it to me, and the government can fix it. That is a recipe that's giving us this problem right now. We need to stop playing that game. And in the minute that we have left, Lynn, again, how can people reach you and, you know, get you to speak for them and read what you've written?
Okay, commoncorediva.com. I also have a donation link on my website, so if you wish to financially bless any of the work that I do to help keep you informed, it would be an honor to be blessed. If not, prayer support is always needed. You can find me on Twitter X, commoncorediva.com, Facebook, commoncorediva 2023. And if you wish to schedule me for any sort of speaking engagement or whatever, it's info@commoncorediva.com.
Lynn, thank you so much for joining me today. Absolutely another learning experience for me and the listeners. And I can't wait to have you back on.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Elena, and I hope your audience has a wonderful time until we meet again.
Thank you, and thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.